Welcome to the Radio Rabbi program. We did it. Thanks to all of you who contributed to our GoFundMe initiative. Thanks to you, the Radio Rabbi program is back on the air. We plan to broadcast the Radio Rabbi program as a podcast that will air twice a month. Look for our announcement on Facebook so that all of you can tune into the podcast, which will appear on our website, rabbibarbara.com. As the Radio Rabbi program begins its 16th year, our mission is still the same. The Radio Rabbi is designed to bring listeners of all Jewish backgrounds, along with listeners of all different faiths, a lively program that features Jewish culture, tradition, timely topics, and interesting guests. And now, Rabbi Barbara Aiello, your Radio Rabbi.
Yes, indeed. It is a thrill, a joy to be back on the radio with all of you today. This is the Radio Rabbi program. I'm Rabbi Barbara Aiello, and thanks to so many of you who donated for us to be able to create this podcast, and we appreciate it so very, very much. Just in time for Pesach, right? Just in time for Passover. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Seder plate and also a modern pluralistic meaning for the items that are on the Seder plate as well. Passover is coming, the first Seder. It traditionally would be the evening of the 30th of March. The second Seder would be the 31st of March. And to our Christian friends, they will be celebrating Easter on Sunday, April 1st. So a lot of things going on in the upcoming weekend, and I'm so very pleased that you're joining with us, and we're so pleased to be back on the air as well. Well, we have a nice piece of music to get us started this morning. It's called Kol Dodi, which means the voice of my beloved. Kol Dodi, it is arranged for choir by David Warren Simons, and it is a kind of a modern take on an old song. But we like to bring you new Jewish music, too, here on the Radio Rabbi program. Let's listen now to Kol Dodi. Did you enjoy that? I hope you did. I hope you did. Now let's talk about the history of the Seder plate. Do you have one at home? Well, this would be a good time to look for it if you're not exactly sure where it is. And maybe shine it up if it's metal or if it's ceramic. Wash it. Maybe there's a little bit of the dregs left there from the last Seder. Or maybe you haven't had a Seder in your home for a long time. This would be a very good time to get started. The Hebrew word for Seder plate is Keara. The first Seder plates were not round, interestingly enough, and they did not have spaces for symbolic foods. Instead, they were Keara, which is the Hebrew word for tray. Our sages taught, one should prepare a large plate, tray, or specially made keara, which has spaces for the items that must be displayed on the Seder table. The first mention of a plate used to hold the symbolic Seder foods is in the Mishnah, the earliest compilation of oral laws, and that was around the 3rd century Common Era. But it is not known if these plates were artistically decorated, painted, etc., made to look special. There are three illustrations in medieval Ashkenazi Haggadot, that is the book, of course, that we use that accompanies the Seder plate. We use to create the Seder service around the family table. Now, in Ashkenazi families, those from Central Europe and Eastern Europe, in those Haggadot, they show a large round plate on the Passover table, while in the Sephardic, where the Spanish and Middle Eastern Jewish families and an Italian Haggadah of that era sometimes depict the use of a wicker basket. Ceramic Seder plates from the 15th century in Spain, that's where they originated from, as well as plates from the Middle East containing artistic motifs common to both Jewish and, interestingly enough, Islamic culture. In 18th century Germany, Jews used plates made of pewter, sometimes transformed into Seder plates by engraving illustrations from the Passover story or Hebrew inscriptions from the Haggadah. Wealthy families in the 18th and 19th century in Germany commissioned ornate silver plates, and one type of Seder plate probably developed in the 18th century had three open tiers, and that's where you placed the matzah, the unleavened bread. So what is on the Seder plates? Well, there's a shank bone, a roasted egg, the maror, which is bitter herbs, the haroset, and according to most opinions, also the karpis and the parsley. Well, the zeroah, that is the word for bone, but in this case, it does not mean bone. Interestingly enough, it means arm, to remind us of the outstretched hand with which God delivered the Jewish people from bondage. On our Seder plate, we also find the betza, the egg. A hard-boiled egg broiled over the fire reminds us of the offering in honor of Yom Tov, the Korban Hagiga, which Jews were required to bring when the temple still existed. An egg is also used because it is food eaten by mourners, and Jews were in mourning because we were slaves. Also, betza in Aramaic, pronounced beya, means want or desire. Thus, the egg on the Seder plate implies the desire of God to deliver his people. Maror is the Hebrew word for bitter herbs. This reminds us of the bitter life our ancestors experienced in Egypt. Five vegetables are found on our plate: romaine lettuce and horseradish as well. Now, some people prefer romaine lettuce over any other permissible bitter herb because romaine lettuce is sweet to the taste at first. This is similar to our exile in Egypt, which started with sweetness but turned out to be very bitter indeed. Also, the Hebrew word for lettuce is chasa, which also means mercy. The lettuce symbolizes the mercy which God showed to our forefathers and our foremothers when he freed them from the house of bondage. Another choice for a bitter herb is horseradish. It should be ground up. To prevent tears when grinding horseradish, place a carrot in your mouth while you're grinding the horseradish. I can attest to the fact that it really does work. Or you might want to use chicory root, endive, or escarole. These are also permitted as examples of the bitter herb. Now, what about the haroset, or harosis, if you are pronouncing it in the Ashkenazi way? Well, the haroset is a paste-like mixture. It is a mixture of apples, filberts, ginger, and red wine. Apples are used because the Jewish mothers were to give birth outside the city under apple trees so as not to be detected by the Egyptian taskmasters. Filberts are used because the Jewish people are compared in Shir HaShirim, in the Song of Songs, to a garden of filberts. Ginger. Well, ginger reminds us of the mortar that the Jewish people used for making the bricks with which they built the Egyptian cities. And the red wine reminds us of the blood of the infants that were hurled into the Nile by the Egyptians. The haroset should be thick to remember the mortar, but before dipping the maror into the haroset, we make the haroset more liquefied by adding a little more red wine. Now, the carpus can be celery, it can be a root vegetable, a radish, onions, parsley, or even potatoes. Carpus should be a vegetable not included in the family of bitter herbs. So the ones we just named, that would not be your carpus, but which requires a bere peri ha'adoma, is used as an appetizer. The above vegetables all conform to the prerequisites except for the potato. The potato was introduced in some countries where there were no other affordable vegetables at all. And in this spirit of following in the footsteps of our fathers, many of us continue to use the potato, even though we can readily get any of the other vegetables these days in modern times. Now, the word carpus is made up of the letter samek, the numerical value sub 60, which alludes to the 60 myriad of Jews, or the 600,000 who left Egypt, and the word perek, which means extremely hard work. This signifies the 600,000, which is 60 times 10,000 Jews who worked extremely hard in Egypt and passed through the sea, the salt water. Another reason we dip the carpus in salt water or vinegar, which we do here in Italy, as a symbol of the tears and sweat which poured from our people during Egyptian bondage. The salt water, well, it serves a double purpose. First, it represents the tears of the carpus Jews, and so we dip the carpus, symbolizing the 600,000 Jews who worked so very hard, as we just said, we dip the carpus into it. And second, it represents the sea. We then dip the carpus into salt water to express the fact that the 600,000 Jews who worked very hard indeed crossed the Sea of Reeds, or as it's sometimes translated, the Red Sea. Now, at the Seder table, we should use three matzahs. Why three? Normally, on each Shabbat and Yom Tov meal, we place two loaves of bread, or matzo, on the table. On Passover Eve, we put three. The three remind us that today we only have three types of Jews: Kohen, Levites, and Israelites, who must always be together. Did you know that it is customary in many communities for the Seder leader to wear a white robe, referred to as a kittel, and the Seder leader dresses in white for the conducting of the Seder? White alludes to the quality of purity and mercy. Thus, the high priest would wear a white robe when he entered the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. A white garment for the Seder, well, although it is a mitzvah to adorn oneself on this night with brightly colored, costly garments of silk and tapestry, nevertheless, it is customary for the head of the household to wear a plain white garment. One of the reasons for this is that the dead are clothed in white before burial. This is a reminder to prevent the person from becoming too full of pride, too much hubris. This is the Radio Rabbi program. I am your Radio Rabbi, podcasting to you from my website, www.rabbibarbara.com. And it's so nice to have you with us today. Did you know that you can become a sponsor of the Radio Rabbi program? As a matter of fact, the William David Company is a sponsor of this very first Radio Rabbi program, and the William David Company is honoring the birthday of a daughter of Felicia's 17th birthday. Dr. Randy Ross is head of the William David Company and founder and CEO, and she honors her daughter's 17th birthday by sponsoring this particular program. Would you like to be a sponsor? Well, you can be. Just send me an email, rabbi@rabbibarbara.com, rabbi@rabbibarbara.com, and you can sponsor a Radio Rabbi podcast dedicated to a friend, a family member, or the memory of someone who has passed on. Well, we're going to talk a little more today about the Passover Seder, and it is the Hebrew word, no, not for dinner. It is not for dinner. It means order or arrangement. The word Seder in Hebrew means order or arrangement, and it means the order of prayers, songs, stories, and symbolic food that combine to tell the story of the exodus of the Hebrews from slavery to freedom. The Seder is a Jewish ritual feast that marks the beginning of the Jewish holiday, when Jews sit down as families and communities and do what the Book of Exodus tells us to do. And what is that directive from the Book of Exodus? And you shall tell it to your son on that day, saying, because of this God did for us when he took me out of Egypt. The Seder itself has two important ritual items: the Seder plate, which we just discussed the history of, and the instructional manual called the Haggadah. The word Haggadah in Hebrew means the telling. We use these because we are commanded to make the story come alive for our children, which means making the ancient story relevant to modern life. So that's what we're going to do this morning. We have our instructional manual, the Haggadah, and we have the Seder plate complete with all the symbolic foods so that we can make modern sense out of the ancient tradition. So, how does the Seder begin? Well, our story opens with a tale of sorrow. The Jews were forced to work unbearably hard for no reward. We were the victims of a cruel tyrant. Let's think about the word victim today. Today, as we dip the parsley, we think about modern-day victimhood. Ask yourself, has it been a bad year? Have I had a hard life? Have I been a slave to circumstances, sometimes like the Hebrew slaves, something beyond my control? So as I dip my parsley, as I taste my sweat and my salty tears, am I really feeling sorry for myself? Am I an Olympic complainer? Have I taken that swan dive into the cesspool of self-pity and all my friends and family held up a 10? Like my ancestors before me, I've had a back-breaking life, but how is my attitude? This parsley wants me to take a good look inside. In our Haggadah, our story continues. And now we'll talk about the chayn, the horseradish. We add the root to our Seder plate because it is maror, it's bitter. Life was bitter for our ancestors. We had very little of anything, even time. No time for family, certainly no time for friends. No special days, no special celebrations, nothing to break the monotony of a bitter, nasty life. In our Haggadah, we read that Jewish families were separated from one another. Men lived and worked with men, women with women, children, while they were pressed into slavery very early as well. And to add insult to injury, on the off chance that any of these couples became pregnant, their male children were murdered by Egyptian soldiers. Too numerous, these Jews, is what the Pharaoh said. As we taste this bitter herb, we ask ourselves about the bitter pills we've had to swallow. Did we lose someone or something precious? Did a criminal take away our treasure? Did we cry out to God, "Why me? Why now?" Did we shake our fists at the heavens and shout, "Life just isn't fair"? Are we jealous, envious, bitter that other people have those things in life that we think we should have had? Pharaoh's heart was hardened. That's what we read in the Torah. Now, not only are the Jews building temples, granaries, silos, and palaces, but now we have to make the bricks and the mortar too. The charoset, a mixture of apples, nuts, and wine, is made to look like the mortar and the matzah, the unleavened bread, which represents the bricks. The modern take on an old story is the question we ask now. Where am I stuck like mortar between the bricks? What am I doing day after day, year after year, that's got me stuck like mortar between bricks? Where am I trapped, and how have I trapped myself? Am I stuck in a dysfunctional relationship? Am I mired in credit card debt? Do I need to make a change in my life, my work, or my behavior? But I'm a real stick in the mud, too paralyzed by how I look or what people will think to take a meaningful action. Well, the story goes on, and finally, after 10 brutalizing plagues, from frogs to lice to boils to the death of the firstborn in each Egyptian household, Pharaoh relented to Moses' plea, "Let my people go." So what happens next? Moses and Aaron ran back to the tenth city where the slaves lived. We can go. But the women, well, they stopped Moses and Aaron right in their tracks. Wait, the bread didn't have a chance to rise. The women had a plan and they were unrelenting. Moses finally convinced them that they had to act and act now. But the bread on their backs, that's what they did. They put the bread on their backs and beat it out of town. Matzah, the bread of our affliction, than the bread of our salvation. So, in modern terms, what is matzah a symbol of? It is a symbol of hanging on to old ideas. No matter what happens, we've always done it this way or that way, and it's my way or the highway. The intransigence of some almost doomed us. What if we Jews had waited for the bread to rise? There would have been no parting of the Sea of Reeds, no safe passage from slavery to freedom. We'd be doing the same old thing. Well, as they say in the recovery community, if I always do what I always did, then I'll always get what I always got. So I ask myself, does that sound like me? Do I pressure my family or friends to stick with tradition long after the tradition has lost its meaning? Am I it's my way or the highway in my relationships with other people? Am I a roadblock to taking a chance to making a change? Well, we talked about the bone, the zeroa, and there's another meaning we can share as well, because the bone represents the lamb sacrificed by the slaves, something that took tremendous courage, especially since to the Egyptians, a lamb was considered to be a god. We Jews, we slaves, had killed one of the Egyptian sacred animals, and then we had the audacity to mix some of the blood with hyssop and smear it on our tent posts. Oy vey. But Moses assured us that when the angel of death saw the lamb's blood smeared on the doorpost, she would pass over our homes and our children would be spared. That's why today we have the mezuzah on our door and with the Hebrew letter Shin engraved on it. Shin for Shaddai, one of the names of God that means protector. Our ancestors, well, they had tremendous courage to do what they did. So today I ask myself, where is my courage? What am I a slave to? And do I have the courage to leave it behind? Am I a slave to food or to my computer, to video games, to sweets, to pornography? Am I a hoarder of stuff or a techno hoarder? Thousands of emails, Twitters, or Facebook posts. How about that? Websites that isolate me from family and friends. Do I have H1N1? Not the virus, but the obsession. H1N1? Have one, need one? Do I obsess over the newest cell phone or the newest device? Maybe something better, high-definition TV. Do I have the courage, indeed, to leave it behind? We sing Dayenu. We sing Dayenu, it would have been enough. And in our Sephardic tradition, we use onions, and we spring onions with the long stems on them. We hold it by the onion bulb, and then we beat each other and ourselves with the onions to remind us of the whips that the whippings that we had to tolerate from the slave masters. Die, die, ain't new. It would have been enough, right? Are we beating a dead horse? Are we beating ourselves up? Dayenu, have we taken time to be grateful? And finally, on our Seder plate, we find the egg, the symbol of life. Life that continues month by month, season by season, day by day. We say to one another, where there's life, that's right, there's hope. The egg is a symbol of life renewed. It asks us to have hope that no matter what our burdens, what our sorrows, if we're willing to step out on faith, to move from Tzoras to Simcha, from sadness to joy, from slavery to freedom, we truly will be free. This is the Radio Rabbi program. I'm wishing all of you Chag Pesach Sameach. Can you say that with me? Chag. Chag, that means festival. What festival? Pesach. Say it with me. Pesach. And of course, it will be joyful. Sameach. Let's do it together. Chag Pesach Sameach. This is Rabbi Barbara Aiello wishing all of you a happy and joyful Passover. The Radio Rabbi is a pluralistic program. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, Reform, a progressive, Orthodox, a Reconstructionist. Maybe you're conservative or renewal, humanistic, Ashkenazi, or Sephardic like me. Are you part of the Anasim community? That means you might be crypto-Jewish, Maranos, or Conversos. Are you a cultural, a secular, or even a gastronomical Jew? You know what? We're all part of the Mishpucha, part of a worldwide, wonderful Jewish family. As we say to you, welcome home. This is Rabbi Barbara Aiello, your radio rabbi. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.